Welcome to episode number 32. Great day, amazing humans. Yes, welcome to the Own Your Thrive podcast and Empowered in My Skin production. My name is Nkechi Wafa Robinson, and I am founder and CEO of Empowered in My Skin, an experienced technology executive at one of Canada's largest financial institutions, an author, an International Federation of Bodybuilding pro athlete, an inspirational speaker, and most recently, a viral sensation after my You Matter speech hit over 3 million views worldwide. This show is all about thriving, and I will be bringing on some amazing humans that own their thrive to help you figure out how you too can own yours. So please leave a review on whatever medium you are listening to this on, and make sure to join along on the web at empoweredinmyskin.com so you can be notified when new episodes are available. For now, I'm your girl. Let the show begin. Great day, amazing humans. Yes, I'm so excited. Yes, I'm saying it again about this next episode with this amazing human. She's an inspirational speaker, a podcast host, an award-winning documentary filmmaker who believes that our greatest responsibility in this world is to share the stories that create possibility for others. She's the founder of Indini, a platform to inspire, educate, and entertain, and to encourage all women to believe in who they are and what they're truly capable of. She's also the founder of Woman on Fire Summit, which we'll talk about, which is a high energy event geared to inspire, transform, connect, and entertain all who attend. So I want you to put your ears together for the amazing Sandra Chuma!
I feel like I need to cheer for myself after that introduction.
I'm like, who's she talking about?
Yeah, I'm talking about you. I'm talking about your amazing self.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. It is a great day for me. I'm so excited to be on your podcast because I've been watching you. I remember when this was an idea that you had, and now to just watch it bloom, to watch it just soar, and just to listen to you and the energy and the enthusiasm and the inspiration that you bring in every episode. I just love it.
Well, if I could, I want to acknowledge you for something. I want to acknowledge you for the role you've played in my life already. You know, we met last year, September, so it's not even a full year. And I truly do believe that it is very possible for people to enter into our lives and have massive impact and sustainable impact. And that's exactly what you've done for me. And when you interviewed me, that interview made me sit up in a way. When I listened back to it, I wanted to continue to create a higher version of that woman that I was watching, that you pulled out of me. Like, I almost feel like it was a different me in that interview. Like there was a level up in my life as a result of that. And so, you know, a big part of just plunging into Own Your Thrive is from that, you know, because everything else has been a level up since then. And so thank you for what you pulled out of me.
You were already, you know what? Here's the funny thing about you saying that is I feel like as an interviewer, you're there to hold the mirror up to what already is. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I was just mirroring what I was seeing and who the energy that you gave off. Mm-hmm. And that's why I wanted you on the part. And I remember after that podcast episode, just, do you remember I cried after?
Yes, I know. But you know what happened around, that was the day after Michelle Obama.
Oh, yes.
So that you know what I'm talking about. That whole experience, it was something to have interviewed me after that encounter.
Something. Yeah. It was truly something, but I'm not surprised by anything that you've done. And I have no doubt that this is just the beginning of what we're going to see
awesome,
of you.
Awesome. But now this is about you. So this, I'm excited to sit back.
You said how we met last September. So let's just tell the people that you did not particularly want to talk to me when we met last September.
No, that's not. So I have my tribe, and it's not like I'm trying to add people to it.
You know, we were in an environment where
there wasn't a lot of people that looked like us.
Anytime you see other people who look like you, you're like, oh my gosh, you are my people. I got that. And then we had the little thing with, I had to bring that because you had your little cooler bag with your food in it. And then we went to the next thing. You're sitting there eating your little cooler bag.
Yes. And, you know, so it was a special bonding. And so for those of you that are on the call, I think also the experiences and where you meet people, we met at the Summit of Greatness. And those are one of those, you know, Lewis Hose hosted it in Columbus, Ohio. It's really awesome. And it's one of those experiences where you're in a life-changing environment. You know, people's lives are being changed by what is being said and the experiences that is being shared. And we met in that, and that just makes sense to where we're on today. So all that, it's time for me to go deeper into your life. And so if I were to ask you, what is the brand Sandra Chuma? Tell me.
What is the brand? You know, I would have to say that the brand, first and foremost, is something that my father taught me growing up. So I was born and raised in Zimbabwe, and I literally was born in a mud hut with no running water, no electricity. And as life progressed and as through hard work, through circumstances, we were afforded more opportunities than perhaps, you know, some of our relatives. My father always said to me, always, he said, to she who much is given, much is required. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like so much of my life, because of where I came from, has, you know, that has colored the way that I approach the world, because I recognize the privilege that I have, the privilege of living where I live, being able to do what I do. And so for me, it really is, comes from a place of A, being of service, B, how can I use myself, my life, my skills mm-hmm. to help uplift others? I think mm-hmm. that probably is the biggest mm-hmm. guiding principle mm-hmm. for me in terms of who I am.
And that's beautiful, because I see that like emulated in everything that you do. And every, as I listen to your interviews, it's so infused into who you are and shining the light and allowing people to really operate at full wattage. It's a beautiful thing. It's not everyone has that talent. So, you know, we thank this world for your light.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
So I'm the CEO of Energy. Like I bought the shares up on that. And so my next question is, what are you the CEO of?
Oh gosh, that's such a, you know what? I'd like to say love, because mm-hmm. I think that, again, you know, going back to how I was raised mm-hmm. and the things that I was taught is even mm-hmm. growing up without much, mm-hmm. there was always love. There was always mm-hmm. love, and it was always about how can you love other people and mm-hmm. how can you be, you know, use yourself. So I think love mm-hmm. is, and here's the funny part too. Obviously, mm-hmm. love is a big part of my life because I married a guy whose mm-hmm. name means love.
Love. Oh, that's why he's such a special human. I love your husband. Yes.
But love, I'd say mm-hmm. I'm a lover.
mm-hmm. So because you're the CEO of love, then I'm just going to take that a little bit further. So the royal wedding, Bishop Michael Curry took the entire world to church, okay, with his sermon on love. And I want you to do that for us right now. I want you, for maybe the next minute or so, just take listeners on a journey of love and speak that into them right now.
The first thing that I would say, and I think it's the one that's most overlooked, is that before you can love somebody else, you need to love yourself. And that's a lesson that it's taken me a long time to learn. You know, it's been a hard thing to learn, because in some ways as well, I was brought up in a culture that said, oh, you know, when you love yourself, that's egotistical and that's selfish. And you know, and yet without loving yourself, loving all of yourself as you are, flaws and all, good things, bad things, and being able to recognize the power and the strength and the possibility that you have within yourself, it's very hard for you to go out into the world and extend love to others. So I think for me, that's been the lesson that I've had to learn, is that before I can love others, I have to love myself. And I think as well, particularly as women, we're almost brought up to believe that she or she will be the person who will come and make us whole, that I need an external something to tell me that I am good enough, that I am worthy, that I can be all that I can be. And yet you are everything that you need. There is no outside of you that needs to come in to tell you of your worthiness, to tell you of your beauty. So for me, I think if there's one thing, if I had to say, what is the one thing that I would want my daughter, my nieces, even my nephews too, but I think it's such a thing we struggle with as women, it would be that everything, the foundation of everything, is loving yourself. And that is not a selfish act. That is how you become all that you can possibly be in this world.
Wow. And so you leave me emotional, because I know what that's like. You know, I was introduced to a book, A Return to Love, in 2014. That was 6 years ago. And I'm 48 this year, I'm 47 right now. So at the age of 41 is when I learned that lesson. And so, you know, it just makes me emotional, because I think about how much of life I was looking externally for something that I always held. And I think that that's why I'm so radical about how I love and talking about it and sharing it. So thank you for that. Thank you for touching me. Thank you for touching the listeners.
Thank you. But like you, it's a lesson that has taken me a lifetime to learn, you know, because I looked too external to, you know, and, you know, I'm from an African family. And so it was like, you're not good enough until you have 3 degrees. And then I thought, when we live this life of when I have this, or when I've achieved this. And for the longest time, that was my life, where it was like, when I have this degree, then I'll be good enough. Yeah. Or when I've, you know, built a business, or when I've all of the, when I'm this size, when I, all these things that we, when no, there is no when I. Today, this moment, you are good enough as you are.
Thank
you.
As
you are is enough, right?
Thank you. Listeners, hear that. You are absolutely enough. There's nothing more in this moment that you need other than what already lives inside of you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sandra Chuma.
And everything too, because here's the other thing. I think we carry so much shame with us as well about the things we've done in the past or experiences we've had. And I feel like, gosh, like there is no shame, because those scars, those wounds, those things you had to go to brought you to this moment. You wouldn't be who you are without having experienced all of that. And your pain, your things that you experience are the things that will propel you into action to be, do all the things that are possible for you.
I think that, you know, that's a very powerful message, because for anyone that's out there listening to me, you know, to translate that for you, live without regret, you know, and we have to stop. I often catch myself saying that, oh man, if only. No, not if only. No, what happened in order for me to get to this moment. So it's, how am I then using everything I have now to then continue to create life, right? Because I think we are creators of life, you know? So, you know, yeah.
100%. That's something that, you know, I think that too many of us, we go through, we almost abdicate responsibility for our lives. You know, we want to blame, you know, the circumstance and the job and the whatever pandemic and this and that's so disempowering, because here's what I know for sure, we don't always get to pick the circumstance. You don't get to pick where you live, how you were born, you know, what you go through, but you always have a choice about whether you want to react or whether you want to respond. And respond puts you in a place of power. It puts you in a place of choosing. It puts you in a place of taking back the power from whatever the situation is. And I feel like for so many of us, we don't realize that we create our lives. We create our lives in what we say to ourselves. We create our lives with the words that we speak. We create our lives in the way that we think. And there's such power when you acknowledge that and realize that you are literally creating your life.
Creators. Yes, I love that. Great quote, in case you haven't heard, Kyle Cease. You know Kyle Cease? Mm-hmm. He says, be a creator of a life, not a consumer. Very, very powerful. Oh, love
mic
that.
Drop. Yes.
So again, thank you so much for being here today. Listeners are right in here. You own your thrive. At the end of this podcast, what do you want to be known for? What's that thing?
The thing that I want to be known for is I did my best. I think at the end of, you know,
Love that. Oh my God, that's a mic drop. Because you can say that in any, I love that.
Anything, you know, as long as, because, oh my gosh, and especially in today's world where there's so much comparisonitis, right? We have social media where people are showing curated highlight reels of their lives. And it's so easy for us to get sucked into that I should be further along and I should be doing this and my life's not as perfect. No, I do your best. Yeah. If you can say at the end of every day, if you can look at yourself and say, I did my best, that's it. That's good enough. That's all you need to do ever is to do your best.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about the season that we're in, this pandemic. First of all, for the listeners, who you hunkered down with?
My hubby. My husband, who is, I was having a conversation actually with a friend of mine the other day, and I realized, you know how sometimes situations kind of magnify for you, you know, a relationship. And I realized that he's my husband, but he's my best friend.
Oh,
like this has truly been for us, like the, yeah, it sucks. You know, it's a pandemic and yes, it you know, it is terrible, you know, to read the numbers and to read about all the people whose lives have been impacted. But this truly in some ways has also been a gift for us because normally we're just go, go, go. You know, we run a business and I have my things that I'm doing and he's busy with his things. So this has just really given us the time to slow down. You know, it's of course, I wish it was under different circumstances, but it's given us the time to slow down and to reconnect because we've been married for what feels like a gajillion years. And so often we're so busy, we're just go, go, go. And so this has been a nice time for us to just, you know, just reconnect and to realize that we actually still really do like each other.
I love that. So in quarantine, you have found out that he's not just the love of your life. He's also your best friend. What has Sandra found out about herself in this experience?
I found out some, I don't actually like avocados.
Okay. COVID-19 brought out avocados.
That was my biggest revelation, was that I don't like avocados. Okay. Seriously, I think that it has been one of the things that I've really been trying to do over the last several years has been, you know, building up, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it, a toolkit of skills and coping mechanisms. And it wasn't until now that some of those tools and skills and things that I've learned have had to come out. And for me, the biggest thing that I've realized through COVID-19 is that I am the thinker of my thoughts. I am not my thoughts. I'm the thinker of my thoughts, that I get to control what I want to think about. Because what I did, especially in the early days, was I was consuming everything. I was on CNN and Fox and what were the numbers today? And I just found that I was getting more and more anxious, more and more just feeling out of control, more and more out of my routine. And I thought, gosh, this is silly, because I don't, yes, I get it. I need to be a good citizen of the world and I need to know if there are things that I need to be aware of and shutdowns and things like that. But at the same time, me knowing minute by minute what the numbers are in Germany it just serves to make me anxious and isn't really productive. So it was just really that mind shift, you know, I can choose what I want to think about and I can choose what I want to focus on. And I can either choose to be sucked into the, you know, the fear and the anxiety, or I can choose to see this as an opportunity to do something, be something, even if it's not even, because also there's been the shaming of you're not doing enough and you haven't built a business. You know, there are those people online, but even just taking the time to be still, which I don't often have. So I think that's been the biggest, is that I'm the thinker of my thoughts and I'm not my thoughts.
And what else have you heard in stillness? Because sometimes, you know, we're just not, we're not still to listen to what the universe or God is telling us. And I personally have started trying to meditate more. Let me not say meditate. Yeah, meditate more, because I was meditating before, but really intentional now. And I hear, like, you actually hear. So what do you, what else are you hearing?
You know, for me, it's, you're not playing big enough. That's truly been the thing.
Okay, so hold on. Okay, because I was going to go there, but let me just go there now, okay? As I'm researching the team, I have a team that researches, right? I didn't realize that you interviewed Bazoma St. John. Okay, we're going to get onto a conversation about...
I actually didn't. Wait, let me just... That I was supposed to interview her. I didn't. Okay. No, what ended up happening was her schedule... We didn't actually make it happen. So what ended up happening was I met her and then we filmed a speech with her and that was what happened.
Yeah, regardless.
So she's on my dream list.
Regardless, there's still an interaction. And I know that... she was on my list. Like, I've ticked that, but so I know that experience. And so I'm still counting that as an experience. Okay. But then even just Women on Fire Summit. Okay. So, you know, we had a conversation about your speakers and you source Lisa Nichols, you source Gabrielle Bernstein, these are big names for someone who's just, this was going to be your first summit.
My very first live event.
And I know what it's like to do these live events. And I know what it's like to even get some of these renowned speakers. And you've had Lisa Nichols on your podcast. And so in Sandra terms, just do help us understand the small nature of those accomplishments. And do tell where you have the opportunity to play bigger. I'm not saying no. I just want to make sure you're acknowledging that you do play pretty large already.
And I think that what is coming through to me is if you can do that, you can do more. And I think, you know, it goes back to, you know, what I said to you earlier, that, you know, I was taught growing up that, and even in our country, we have a term called Ubuntu, where it's like, just because it means I am because you are. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like, just because you're good now doesn't mean we're all good. And so until we're all good, you're not good. And yes. So for me, is recognizing that by virtue of the life circumstances that I'm so privileged to have, that there is more, that I can do more to reach back and help others and help bring people along with me. So I think that's been my realization, is that I say this not to be, not to be arrogant. It's not my intention at all. Mm-hmm. But I've been gifted in many ways, right? There are many gifts that I've been given, not necessarily financial gifts and whatever, but just in terms of the skills that I have. And so I need to be making use of those to make an impact in the world, and not an impact from the perspective of, oh, I'd like them to erect a statue of me when I'm dead, but really from, did I make a difference in somebody else's life? And if that is on the table, that I can do more to bring someone, another person along, then that's the playing bigger that I need to do. Is I think for me as well, there's been a lot of fear. Mm-hmm. Like, well, if I really
That's what I was about to ask you. I was like, what's the holdback?
It's the fear of, well, mm-hmm. It's always there at the back of your mm-hmm. mind. Am I good enough? Can I really mm-hmm. do this? You know, what will other people think? All of those things are some of the things that have held me back from doing what I truly know is the work that I was put here to do. And so that for me, I think has been the message that has been coming through is that, yes, you may think you're playing big, but you're not playing anywhere as big as you have the potential to.
So I don't want to contradict what we said before, but because this is in real time and I'm processing what you're saying. So I love that, first of all, because on my vision board, which you can see, the readers can, I have a statement that says the best way to become a billionaire is to help a billion people. And so my goal is to impact the lives of a billion people. Otherwise, I haven't done enough. So I get, like, I like how you have framed the playing big, and I truly respect that comment. And it's so right. Until everyone feels the same level of privilege that you feel and the blessing that you feel, there's still more work to do, and you want to be part of that work. So that's a beautiful thing. But then I want to just make sure life's a journey. And so when we say that, you're playing too small. So when we go back to saying there are no regrets, you know, so you have to have done what you are doing to even have that mindset that you might be playing too small. So have you been playing too small, or are you setting yourself up for the big game?
I truly feel like I've been playing too small. Like okay. I said, the things that have held me back mm-hmm. have been, fear has been the biggest thing for me mm-hmm. is, well, am I good enough? Can I do it? And it stopped me from asking people, you know, to be on my podcast, to mm-hmm. speak, to asking people to help me raise funds, mm-hmm. asking people to do, because, well, what will they think? And I don't, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know what. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, it truly is, it's not from a place of regret. Mm-hmm. I think it's from a place of realization that if you could do this, mm-hmm. what more could you have done if you just pushed that little bit more, if you'd just been willing to step outside of your comfort zone? Because mm-hmm. I think that a lot of what I've done has kind of sort of, yes, it's been a stretch, but mm-hmm. it's not been a huge stretch mm-hmm. in the sense that in some ways it's been comfortable. And so yeah. what about if I make myself just that little bit more uncomfortable? Mm-hmm.
Yes. No. And I get that. And I totally get that. And then maybe for me, I'm trying to drive also, cause sometimes we're really hard on ourselves, and we can't say that everything that's happened in our lives has happened exactly the way it's supposed to have happened for us to be where we are on today. So had you maybe played bigger, we wouldn't be on this podcast, right? Like, so, and I believe that this encounter was meant to be. So, you know, I personally, you're doing a lot, and you're doing some really, really great work, and you've lifted up many people. Can you do more? Yes. Will you? 100%. And will you continue to play bigger? Just the main fact that you realize that you have the capability and the opportunity to, you will. But if there's any consolation I can give you, you've been playing big.
You know what? The best, I heard a line and I thought, gosh, that's such a beautiful way of expressing it. And I can't remember who said it, but they said, I'm happy with what is, but eager for more.
Yes. That's even if that is so great. It's just no different than me. I used to be of the same mindset. I just the other day, I renewed my mind. I am going, there's no dim light no more. Full wattage. Full wattage. Like, COVID has made me open up my eyes to opportunity, you know? And so, you know, in keeping with that, and we're in this COVID, and I truly believe that, you know, like you, COVID has, you know, enabled you to be able to slow down and, you know, one, recognize the blessings that you have and the privilege that you have. And it's beautiful how you've articulated that and the excitement of what you want to do. That's not everybody's reality.
No. And, you know? And I so recognize how blessed I am, you know, just the fact that I am one of the fortunate people who can stay home, still make a living, and be comfortable at home. You know, I know, for example, in my home country, you know, the virus is just starting to kind of be felt. And I know that there, it's a very different reality where people don't have the luxury of quarantining and social distancing. And so that's one of the things that really has for me been something I've tried to focus on is, yes, it's an inconvenience. Yes, you know, in my case, I had to cancel an event, but gosh, like the world is going through all of this. And I am privileged to be able to, for the most part, come out of this, you know, unscathed.
And this is not the first time you faced adversity.
No, I mean, like I said, you know, I've, and that's part of where I believe my mindset comes from, because like I said, you know, when you're literally born in a mud hut with no running water, no electricity, I have not, you know, I don't see it on aid organization adverts, whatever. I have cousins and, you know, who literally live in homes where they don't have electricity, they don't have running water. And so my privilege is something that I'm very, very aware of. And I recognize as well what it's taken and the sacrifices that had to be made for me to, you know, sit here and speak to you today, you know, through the blessing of so many people who sacrificed so much so I could be who I am today.
And it probably gives you the unique perspective that this is not suffering.
It does. It does. For many,
let's just be real. For many people in North America, they would say they're suffering right now with how our social amenities and have been sort of taken from us temporarily, right? But that would not be suffering for you, considering what your background is like.
Yeah, that's so right. And I guess life is all about perspective. You know, the world is not as it is, but it's as you are. And so for some people in North America, yes, they're suffering because, oh my gosh, they get to sit on the couch and watch Netflix all day. But I don't want to discount that, because our suffering is maybe for somebody being cooped up in a house all day, even if you have the quote-unquote creature comforts, is in some way suffering. So I don't want to minimize that, but certainly from a physical perspective, you know, when we go back to business school and talk about psychology and Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, for the most part, there's so many more people where I am from who are literally at the basics, you know, and this is physically suffering.
Yeah. Right. So this podcast, again, is all about thriving. And I do know, because I've had the privilege of being part of your life, that you were putting in a lot of work and effort into an event that you were curating called, you know, Women on Fire. It's your first summit. And I already know that leading up to it had its own challenges and sets of stresses, and, you know, but there was a lot of work and hard effort put into that. What was the experience? And if you could just take us through that, and then how you sort of have come out of that thriving, what you've learned from it, having to have worked so hard and then canceled it because of something that was out of your control. If you could just take us through that, because I think that would relate to a lot of people.
Yeah, you're so right that this was, you know, when you look at, you know, like my vision board and what was when I came into 2020 January, it was like my life for probably 6 months, you know, of the last 6 months had been all about Women on Fire, and it was going to be this live event, and I really wanted to make it a phenomenal experience for anybody and everybody who was going to come. You know, we had, as you mentioned, you know, Lisa Nichols and Gabby Bernstein and Stefan Speaks and Love Park Co. And it was just going to be, for me, in my mind, this epic day. And then this happened. And just to give you context about the decision process was, we were probably very early in canceling. Early. Like we decided, I think it probably had been the first week of March. And I was actually at a live event the first week of March, and everybody was kind of merrily living their life. And I'm having to think about, do we cancel? Do we not cancel? Do we cancel? Do we not cancel? Because at that point, it was something, this whole virus was something that was happening, quote unquote, over there. It wasn't, mm-hmm. no one had died. No one had been mm-hmm. diagnosed in Canada. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a thing yet. But here's what I thought about. I thought about, okay, if I wait, because our event was in April, if I wait, I have all these people who are committing to the event who are, because there are people who are booking travel from Barbados and the Bahamas and wherever. So these people, I'm going to let them buy a ticket. I'm going to let them book hotels and all of this kind of stuff. But it wasn't even that. It was the thought that if it's here, if the event is happening and somebody has the virus, and for the most part, the people who'd be coming to the event are healthy. Mm-hmm. But what if they live with an elderly relative mm-hmm. who they pass it on and then they pass it on and, mm-hmm. And then some way we are tied, or the event is tied to some person losing their life. So that mm-hmm. was my thought process. But literally, even when we're having the discussions as a team, again, it was something that was, no one had been diagnosed in Canada. No one had died. It was something that was over there. But I just had a, I don't know, like a sense.
Feeling.
And then I actually had a call from Gabby Bernstein's agent. And we had a conversation about, we're watching things unfold and we're seeing all this and we're starting to feel some anxiety. And it was at that point that I felt like, you know what, this is it. I've got to make the decision. And I remember when we announced that we're canceling, because it took us a couple of weeks before we actually announced. Mm-hmm. I remember when we announced, I literally had people DMing me, calling me, texting me, asking, but why are you canceling? I mean, now with hindsight,
yeah, like, it's understood. Yeah, that's yeah.
But at that point, and there were other bigger events than us that had not canceled, that were not saying anything. And so it felt like a big decision. And I remember actually, I got off a call late one night. My husband was already in bed. And I said to him, I got into bed and I said, I think I need to cancel. And he said, I think you should. And that for literally was, that was it.
Yeah, that was a decision.
Yeah.
And it,
yeah.
What was the emotions? Because that's there's a grieving piece of that, right? How did that feel?
Yeah. In that moment when I made the decision, I said that to him and he kind of rolled over. Yeah, I think you should. And he fell asleep. And I remember just sitting up awake and then literally tears coming to my eyes, because for me, it was, there was so much that had gone in terms of work, in terms of effort, in terms of, we had like all the sponsors had shipped their products and they're sitting there in my office. And I'm like, what do I say? How do I explain this? And then of course there's the financial impact, because yay, I had insurance, but insurance pointed me to that fine print that says, does not cover pandemics. So it literally is like, you're thinking about the financial impact of it all. But I definitely did go through, like, I think initially there was just so much stuff that had to happen in terms of, okay, we've got to communicate with everybody's bought tickets. We've got to communicate with the venue. So I was just in doing mode, and it was kind of when that started to kind of subside, that, okay, we've made the announcement. We've told everybody who we've made whatever decisions that need to be made. That's when I had the, okay, this isn't happening. And also just from a activity perspective, I'd gone from this place, because we were literally a month out from the event. So I'd gone from this place where literally every waking minute was consumed with what I need to do today, who do I need to talk to today, to nothing, like radio silence. But here's what I recognize. I recognize that sometimes in life, things happen out of, and it doesn't matter what the goal is, because this was my goal for this year, was to do this event. I recognize that a not now doesn't mean not ever.
I was just about to say that a delay is not a denial.
Mm-hmm. And so for us, it really is, we're kind of in a holding pattern. We're parked for a moment, but the event will absolutely happen at some point. We just, once things have kind of settled down and, you know, I don't know what the new normal will be, we will absolutely make a decision about setting a new date. And it was something that I can't believe I'm about to quote Mike Tyson. But I'm going to quote Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson said back in, was it 2007 when he had that infamous fight with Evander Holyfield? He said, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, we had like project plans and we had lists and we had contingencies, and nowhere on that list was a pandemic. Mm-hmm. And so it literally kind of, for a second, just, you know, but I recognize now that it just means that we're going to do it later. Yes. It just means it's just not right now. It's
not the right time. And I'm going to tell you a different perspective on that. If you want to make God laugh, tell him your plan.
Yeah.
Right. So that one I live by that one, right?
Yeah.
So surrender it all. And you are right. I believe that based on what I understood you was the intent and the objective of the event, it is going to be even more magical and purposeful and needed coming out of this COVID-19 quarantine situation. So
yeah,
I look forward to that. Woman on fire. Yes, you are on fire. And so on that,
to be announced. Like it always feels weird now because like everything will be like woman on fire, April 5th, woman on fire, April 5th.
I love it. So I'm gonna actually use that. My next question, I was gonna use the word thriving, but when you think of a woman that's on fire, who comes to mind?
Oh my gosh. You know who comes to mind for me is not anybody famous, not
doesn't
anybody
matter, that have to be. Yeah.
It literally is the women in my life. Mm. So for me, it is my mother, who is one of the most incredible human beings that I know, has the biggest and most generous heart, and just all the things that she had to overcome. And then if I, you know, I think Maya Angelou had the quote that, you know, I come as one, but I stand as 10,000. And is all the women whose shoulders I stand on. Those for me are the women on fire because of what they had to, like, I think of my grandmother. So my father's mother, never went to school, never had an education. In fact, she started doing first grade when I think I was 16, was when she was reading the Sea Spot Run, and I would help her read, you know. And she was in her 80s, but she wanted to learn. And then my mother's mother, who also never went to school, never had an education, worked as a housemaid for a family for all of her life. And yet these two women, even though they never had an education, even though neither of them ever saw an airplane in real life, spoke into me this dream and this hope that
you're now manifesting day, and you're now manifesting. It's so a beautiful thing.
I truly feel
their their wisdom is beyond comprehension, to be quite honest. And one of the things I have definitely learned about COVID, and I've had to catch myself, and yesterday in a podcast that I was interviewed for, I actually apologized for idolizing the wrong people. So I know you said it initially, right? Like, they're not famous. I think that we idolize the wrong people. Mm-hmm. It's not those people that have the fame. It's the ones that are on the front line who, to your point, don't have the education, but have the wisdom that can manifest into and pour and speak life into some other human to help them thrive. Those are the heroes and sheroes in our world, right? So
thank you.
Thank you for those lovely women. What is one daily activity that helps you with your thrive?
Meditation.
Oh, okay.
Meditation is... I know when I, like, if I go a day, 2 days where I, because I have such a busy mind, and it has been the one thing that I have found to help me get grounded and also to be intentional. Because I think before I used to just get up and go, and there was no I was moving through the world, just responding to or reacting rather to whatever was going on. And now I try, like, I'm not perfect. I'm not at Mother Teresa standard yet, but I try and just start from a place of A, intention, and B, from a place of gratitude. Those really are the things that I'd say I try and make them non-negotiables in my day.
What is a book that has helped you with your thrive?
The Four Agreements.
Ooh, by Miguel Ruiz. Yes, that's a good one. That's a must read.
Yeah.
What is an app on your phone that helps you with your thrive?
An app that helps. Gosh. Oh, you know what I started using recently is, okay, back to the meditation, an app that I use, which I love and I use pretty much most days for my meditation is Calm. There's an app.
Okay, Calm. Yeah, I know that one.
Yeah, and that's one of my favorites. And then I also started recently using Productive, not an ad for these people, but it's an app called Productive to track my habits. And that's been really, because I guess I must be like competitive in some way. So I'm like, I've got to get my habits done.
Oh, I'm going to check that out. Productive. I like that. Thank you for sharing that. I'm going to look that one up. And what is one misconception of you as you are in your thrive that people have of you?
Oh, I don't know what other people think of me.
That's good.
I don't know.
That's good. I love that.
I'm like,
it's none of your, it's not actually none of your business what other people think of you. But like, for example, no matter what, like today I had a mentoring conversation with somebody and they're like, oh my God, thank you so much for your time. I know how busy you are. And I'm like, all them people that think I'm busy. I said, no, I make time for the things that matter, you know? And so that's a misconception that based on how people see, it's about what people perceive, right? So even still, nothing comes to mind.
I know. I'm trying to think. Like, I don't think I've ever gone to anybody and asked them. Sorry, how do you see?
I don't really ask, but I observe. Like, that's one thing that people say. Oh my God, you're so busy, and I'm like, and I recognize it's because my life is a lot on social media.
You know what I think to something that I spoke about earlier. I think that there are a lot of people who think because of what I do and the things that I've done that I'm not afraid, that I'm fearless. And it's quite the contrary. I think I have fear, but one of the things that I'm working on is feeling the fear, but doing it anyway. I think people look at me and think, oh, you've done all this stuff. She's fearless.
Yes. But you actually fear less.
I fear less.
Less and do it and get the job done. I love that. So I didn't even get a chance to ask you much about Ndini, but would love to know, you know, as part of your playing small and, you know, how are you going to be elevating Ndini going forward?
So Ndini is a platform that I started about 2 years ago. And my intention, actually initially, the reason I started it was because as a woman of African descent and having moved to, you know, living in North America and then living in the UK, and there weren't a lot of positive narratives about
the misconceptions African women. Of African women.
There were so many stereotypical stories about what it was to be an African woman. And initially when I started, it was really for myself, was like, gosh, I never get to hear. I know there are all these like badass women of African descent who are doing amazing things in the world, and yet I don't ever get to hear from them. And so that's really where it started. And then it also was for me wanting to be able to show this to my nieces who are growing up outside of Africa and who have, you know, don't have a strong connection to their African roots. And so that's where it really started, was I just wanted to share the stories of inspiring, trailblazing African women. It's since morphed into, because one of the things that I realized after the first year was that, yes, I wanted to focus on the stories of women of African descent, and I still do for the most part, but that our stories are universal. Yeah. That, you know, doesn't, we all have the same hopes and dreams and fears and aspirations. And so it really is about sharing the stories of inspiring, trailblazing women and having them share their stories and allowing others to see possibility through women sharing their stories. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I'd say that, you know, that the next, I'm really thinking about what is the next phase for Ndini. That it's great for me to share these stories. And I've had so many people who've reached out and said how they've been inspired, and people have started businesses because they heard somebody on the podcast and were inspired by that. But I want to take it to the next level where it's more than just share an inspiring story, where it's like, how can I start to help to give people tools and information that can help them actually make tangible, you know, take tangible steps towards their dreams.
So building a system. You're turning, becoming into a system. That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah, so that's Ndini 2.0.
I love that. There you go. System 2.0. Refactoring. So when we had our interview, one of the most beautiful parts of it was at the end, you said, I am. Please finish.
I am infinite possibility.
You are. And I thank you. And my love for you makes me emotional. And I look forward to the continued relationship that the world is going to be blessed with because you're in it. You're having a relationship with the world. And it's beautiful to watch it unfold. And so thank you so much for the level, the magnitude of your heart, and play big girl, full wattage from here on forward. Yeah. You come out guns blazing out of COVID-19.
They ain't ready.
But thank you. Thank you so much for blessing me with your time.
Thank you. And thank you too for what you're doing with this platform, because through us hearing so many amazing stories, every single time I listen to your podcast, I come away uplifted. I come away inspired. And so thank you for that.
Thank you. And to all your listeners out there, this is where I say, we're out.
So there you have it. I hope you're thriving and thoroughly enjoyed this episode. And remember, whatever medium you are listening to this on, please subscribe, like, review, and share this podcast with somebody else that you think could benefit from the tips that were delivered. Because when we share, that is truly when we have the capacity and the power to change the world. It's been awesome hanging with you. It's your girl, and I'm out.